One of the most profound questions that people ask is, what does a soul experience in those days after death, especially if it is condemned to purgatory? Now, a couple of years ago, a documentary by the name of Purgatory came out, revealing to the English-speaking world a relatively unknown Polish purgatory mystic by the name of Stefania Fula-Horak, with the promise that her writings would come out translated into English, but they haven't. However, I came across a Polish viewer that I asked her the favor of getting me these books, which I got, and then I translated them myself, and the things that I found are absolutely incredible because she tells us what it's like from the viewpoint of the soul in purgatory. Absolutely incredible stuff that we're going to get into in today's video. If you'd like to support this channel in any way, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee. Now, please note that I used Google Translate to translate, so the translation is not perfect. Please bear with me, but it's worth listening to what she has to say. This is from her book, The Afterlife. Everything I know from my holy guardians about the future life I have left, given in a clear and understandable form, translated as it were into our tight human concepts. However, I know from them that everything that happens in the spirit world happens somehow differently, wider, more completely, elusively, and therefore, as it is, it cannot fit in the human mind. Just as you can't describe the feelings, smells, or color, so not similar to tell a man of states liberated from matter of soul, other than by certain similarities, taken from the imaginations that fall under his senses. So what I know and will say about the states of the soul and about the future life, it's a kind of transport, everything that is inconceivable to the clumsy narrowness of our imaginations and words. At the moment when the soul parts with the body, man, even if he was unconscious, even if death occurred momentarily or in a dream, he has a flash of the moment, for a split second is aware of his own death. And even if he was prepared for his death, even if he wanted it and was not afraid of it, before that, in this one decisive moment, he learns with incomparable horror, immediately after death, the soul stands before the court of supreme justice. It's over because God's inexhaustible mercy is over. Whoever crosses a line of life stands before him, before justice, lonely, naked, and waiting for a fair judgment. By the time of the funeral, the soul has not yet moved away from the earth. These are the last moments before taking a penalty or a reward, when it is still allowed to circulate invisibly among people. The words "until the moment of the funeral" mean the period of time that, according to rite, ritual, or custom, is to separate death from the burial of the body. If Catholic, for example, due to some tragic circumstances, he was not buried on the third day after his death, his soul, after the passage of this time, and so moved away from earth. For the soul condemned to purgatory, neither family nor loved ones have the slightest meaning unless you can expect from them help. And the only form of this help and proof of love or friendship, what he then desires from people and what he expects, is prayer. Indescribable suffering makes the soul impossible to tell people that their tears and sadness do not bring her any relief or benefit, that they only hinder this. And so terrible in its seriousness, the transition, and that their suffering is nothing compared to torments on which they kind of spent it, saying her only support, prayer or good deeds. Oh, if people knew, if they thought, if they tried to empathize with the helpless despair of such a soul, be right next to your dearest, beg them for help, get to their conscience and heart, know that these are the last moments communications with the world will be cut off irretrievably, what rescue they need, and to see how often those closest to them just surrender, selfishly of their own pain, as hurt in their own pain, they bend over an empty body, from which the only meaning retreated. Therefore, if the soul loses the hope of arousing in the nearest thoughts about prayer, she is frantically looking even among strangers, someone who would not refuse her. And when he finds it, how he can be grateful for help. how he tries with inspirations to strengthen them in this intention. From the first moment of parting with the body, he has a devastating or joyful soul, understanding the immensity and power of the spiritual world she entered, in contrast to misery and the smallness of everything she left behind. He also experiences a sudden glare. Here, what so far the human mind considered as real and existing doesn't exist at all. And this, what she used to call not real, the spiritual world, is now the unchanging truth. The judgment was of terrible accuracy. The most perfect reigning here is invariably the truth, the one that sometimes seemed so uncomfortable to man on earth, yes, far away, so difficult. How simple it is now when there is no way out, when you can't deliberately, as it was in life, look away from truth. Convicted to purgatory, the soul before it loses consciousness in the first circle of purgatory. The whole of her life, the length of the punishment waiting for her, and the quality of eternal reward, all the time from death to the funeral, she knows that she will have to atone all the faults and make up for all the negligence, and how happy she is that she can. He already knows how disproportionately light is the longest and most unpleasant life compared to even one of the moments spent in purgatory. With what joy she would return to earth, to misery, to adversity, for diseases, for humiliation, and if she could use them now to endure. On earth, you can deserve God at any moment. You can earn his grace and forgiveness. There is nothing to do for yourself here. What are the sufferings of purgatory? The variety of these levels is numerous, not directly covered by thought, because each guilt has its equivalent in suffering. The most terrible torment of the soul is the longing for God she feels constantly, except for the period he spends in some circles of purgatory, where the inability to turn to him with her thoughts, it's her cruelest torment. In all of the circles, the soul is torn upwards towards the light, towards God, and suffers from the inability to get closer to him, thanks to his unatoned sins. No desire to which the human heart is capable, he cannot compare with it, because it is a desire to return to her Creator and Lord, knowing already freed from the tightness of the senses, an immortal soul. God pulls her to himself like a giant and powerful, overwhelming magnetic force. Longing for God is something that the soul cannot get rid of, just like the blind, unfree fillings of metal, they can't stop to the poles that attract them. This longing is, as it were, a background on which various patterns and zigzags of sufferings are outlined, torments and states of the penitent soul. Purgatory consists of countless and various circles, some like the circle of hunger, fear, horror, and trouble I know only by name. About others, I know many things from my holy guardians. Speaking of purgatory, I will skip the torment of longing for God, because this longing is a fundamental state of a penitent soul. It might seem that entering higher and higher circles of purification, getting closer and closer to the eternal light, that the torment and longing would weaken in the face of the hope of imminent satisfaction. No. Close to this one, light precisely enhances in the soul the strenuous, the only striving to connect with God. He tears her towards him with inconceivable force, so that in the last circle of purgatory, where apart from waiting there is no other suffering, longing for God reaches the highest intensity, the circle of wandering. The first and most terrible circle of purgatory is a circle of wanderings. It is a period when the soul revolves close to the earth and no longer has any contact with it. She doesn't remember what was. She doesn't know anything about what will happen to her. She only knows some ghostly, tiring present. She also doesn't see the end of her current journey at all. She doesn't know what's happening to her and for what and for where and for how long. Sometimes she encounters whole clusters of hostile, wandering souls with whom she cannot communicate, whom she is afraid of and whom she cannot avoid. She doesn't know relief nor rest. Pointless, constant movement, constant search for you don't know what, and the thought of that what is, or rather what is not, can go on like this forever. The only thing that exists for her is this one, in complete emptiness, tormented, feared, wandering. Awareness of one's own personality, feeling neither time nor space, neither purpose nor meaning, constantly looking for something right for yourself, and the inability, and the constant inability to find it. In this circle, there are still some of the uncondemned tormentors of Christ from 2,000 years ago, the circle of darkness. The souls in the circle of darkness still know nothing about God. No, they also know what await them in the future. With a frightening meticulousness, you must constantly think about your own faults, sins, mistakes, negligences, and they only understand how poor and miserable the prophet was compared to the loss. She is constantly tormented by the memory of the moments when she commits evil with powerlessness, because he can't do anything to go back or undo anything. She is overwhelmed by regret to herself, despair at the sight of loss and punishment, powerless, full of bitterness and regret, despair, awareness of abandonment, aversion to one's own deeds. Here the unquenchable heat digests her, the circle of idolaters. All who have ever sinned against the first commandment, who put people, science, ambition, themselves first or objects, these are now fully aware of the existence of the one God, and they long for him with a desperate, hopeless longing. However, whichever way they look, they see their old idols in front of them. They would now like to worship the true God, and they still have in their memory old, ridiculous tributes. They want to beg God for help, and they have to ask for her to those, even though they know and understand all the nonsense of such a request. They want to see the light that they sense above themselves somewhere. That's all. But why the old one gave worship to God? As if some sinister cloud is covering them and reduces the clarity. Also, every thought about a mistake made during life, about voluntary shifting values, deepen their sadness and suffering. The circle of accomplices. In this circle, everyone who helped each other in any way meets in sin. Although being around causes them severe suffering, they cannot hide from themselves and constantly have themselves in front of their eyes. Most of them here were united by sinful love. They feel guilty and mutually harmed. They have a grudge against each other and at the same time feel reproaches of conscience. He advises to forget about each other and they can't break up. Oh, how miserable. What they had in common seems dirty and hideous to them. How well they see now their true values and how they can't understand their own blindness. How they would gladly dump today on this person so close and dear during life the whole responsibility. With what fierceness they would attribute to each other these joint faults committed. They remember everything, every moment, every dirty twitch of the heart. Their grief and shame burns, shame for which they didn't know in life. The circle of vision of consequences. Indescribably painful is this circle. Through a torn curtain, he sees the souls on earth and the furthest consequences of his evil deeds and mistakes. He sometimes sees the work of his whole life in ruins and already knows that it happened, because its cornerstone was sin and vice. He sees how every deviation from God's law takes revenge on his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. He sees the yield of a bad one simply spread by him during his life. Example, how many souls and hearts were weeded by the seed of falseness preached by his principles, concepts, and teachings. And he will suffer in this circle not only for himself, but for all sins, whose reason it became to suffer precisely because already understanding evil. He will have to watch the most distant and diverse consequence of his guilt on earth. My friends, there is so much more left to translate. If you found this helpful, please comment down below. And I do want to share with you one of the sponsors of this video, the Rosary Experience, an app for iOS or Android. It has over 3,000 rosary videos to help you meditate better on the holy mysteries of the rosary. It helps you to beat prayer distractions by presenting a new holy mystery image for every bead that helps you stay engaged in meditative prayer. And it has rich rosary videos, variations from Catholic traditions, such as sacred scripture, art, chant, icons, and much more. Check out the link down below if you'd like to use this tool in your praying of the rosary. My friends, God bless you. Please like and subscribe, and I'll see you in the next one.